Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center. And we have a very Klamath radio show today. And joining me are Nick Jocelyn from the Mount Shasta Bioregional Ecology Center. Hey, Nick.
Howdy, Tom. Nice to be here.
Dave Webb from Friends of the Shasta River. Hey, Dave.
Thank you, Tom. Really appreciate being able to speak to people where I used to live in Humboldt County.
And Craig Tucker, Natural Resources Policy Consultant for the Karuk Tribe. Hey, Craig.
Hey, nice to be here.
All right. So we have a very fun-filled show today, talking about our favorite river, the Klamath River, and our favorite tributary to the Klamath River, the Shasta River. So let's get going with a news story that broke this week here about the Shasta River. But for folks who may not be familiar with what I said is the most important tributary to the Shasta, let's get an introduction to this area from the friend of the Shasta River himself, Dave Webb. Dave, what is the Shasta River? Why is it so important to the Klamath River system?
The Shasta River is a real anomaly in terms of salmon production. The river itself's roughly 25 or 30 feet wide and about 4 feet deep. Most people call it a creek. But it's got some really unique features. It has a water supply coming off of Mount Shasta in the summertime from glacial melt. So even in dry years like this, we still have a substantial in-stream flow where any other river running through such a desert area as the Shasta Valley would be dried up and dead. And that water in flowing through the ground picks up nutrients, picks up phosphorus and nitrogen, and then exits the ground as cold, clean, crystal clear water, which feeds aquatic plants because the light can flow through it. And those aquatic plants then feed the aquatic invertebrates, which feed the fish. And the net result for salmon was that given its size, it was once the most productive salmon-bearing stream on the face of the earth. It produced so many salmon that in about 1930, when the Department of Fish and Game first began counting salmon, Snyder, one of the main researchers in the Klamath, described the Shasta as gone in terms of salmon production. And that year they counted 82,000 salmon coming up the Shasta River as a gone stream. So that's what we had, is a river that could crank out fish, clean cold water, and nothing like it anyplace else on Earth. And we've kind of let it go over the years for irrigation water, and it's slowly been shrunken and made dirty and made hot, and had its head cut off. And so now it is struggling. It is still the source of more wild salmon in the Klamath Basin than any other tributary.
So in 1930, 82,000 fish were returning, and the department described the river as gone. What do salmon look like in the Shasta River today? How is the Shasta River doing?
Well, in fairly recent years, we've had runs as large as 18,000. When I first started working on the Shasta River, we were down to 530 back about 1992. And so we're doing better than we were then, but it's taken a lot of attention and a lot of people not ever giving up on pushing for protection. And we're a long ways from what I would call an adequate number of salmon if we want local support. And what I found locally is that if the run in the Shasta is less than about 10,000 fish, there just aren't enough of them to be seen where people can actually access the river. And so you can't build a local constituency of support. So one way or the other, we need to have consistent runs over 10,000. And if we want to be actually providing fish for commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, tribal fishermen, coastal communities, we need to be able to crank out larger runs than that to keep the whole system well supplied with fish.
So, Nick, let's bring you in here. We once had this super productive salmon fishery. We could have it again. What's standing in the way? What is causing the degradation of the Shasta River?
The main cause is agricultural diversions from the river to grow food for cattle.
So it's just water withdrawals from the river is
water,
the problem?
Yes.
So they're taking water out. What happens to this water after it's taken out? Because as I understand it, it's both being put onto land, but then water is coming back into the river that's bad for the river. Can you explain that?
Correct. That is known as tail water. It's water that's returned after flowing across pasture land where commonly cattle are grazing. the water warms up as it flows over the land and also picks up nutrient load from the cattle waste and then returns to the river warm and polluted.
All right. So now we have cumulatively, as a result of a number of straws in the river, all these ranches alongside. Is it correct to say the water is both too warm and too polluted for our native salmon?
I think that's fair to say.
Dave, any additions to this?
No, except that we can't ignore also that groundwater usage is also affecting the flow of the river. And in particular, it's reducing the cold water inflows, which are really essential to maintaining salmon habitat through the summer for coho, for steelhead, for trout, for fish that need to be in fresh water all of their first year or longer, absolutely dependent upon groundwater inflows to the river. And we aren't doing a great job of managing groundwater usage either.
So, Craig, in the past, you and I have talked about the Klamath River and its tributaries, and you've made the point that the problem is that we just don't have enough water. Can you kind of elaborate on what the drought is doing to the Klamath River system and how we ended up at this place where we've totally over-allocated what water there is?
Well, I think part of the problem in the Klamath, but throughout the West, really, is we developed agriculture, we developed our system of dams and diversions and irrigation at a time in the 20th century where it was a pretty wet time period. And so people assumed that this kind of weather pattern would persist forever. And here we are in 2022, and the weather has changed. It's drier. And this isn't a one-off. This isn't a drought this year, and it's going to rain and be all better next year. It is going to be drier in the future. So we simply cannot farm and divert water and use our rivers the same way today and tomorrow that we did yesterday. It's just not going to work. So that's the big problem. And that really underscores why rivers like the Shasta are so important. The fact that the Shasta is fed from the melt of glaciers on Mount Shasta means there's a 200 cubic feet per second base flow in this river year-round, year-in, and year-out. And so it's one of those places where over geologic time, undoubtedly, salmon used it as a refuge. This is not the first time in geologic history there's been a drought. But places like the Shasta are where those salmon survive these hard times, the hard periods, because of the way it's fed by groundwater and has this water source that's above 14,000 feet of elevation. These are the reasons why the Shasta is fundamental. If we're going to restore salmon stocks on the Klamath River, protecting the Shasta River is fundamental to that goal.
So we are again in a drought year this year. And I sometimes need to remind people here on the coast that we're in a drought year because it doesn't feel hot and dry here on the coast, right? I woke up this morning and it was misting on me as I drank my coffee. And we had late season rains. Things are always relatively lush and green here on the coast. Love it for that reason. But it is dry. It's hot inland. So in response to the drought conditions, what is the state of California doing to try to manage both agricultural needs for water and fish's needs for water?
Well, California, one of the things California has tried to do recently is get a handle on groundwater use. So California passed the Groundwater Sustainability Act, and I would just say by and large it has failed to protect California's groundwater stores, and it certainly failed to ensure there's adequate flows in streams to protect fish. So what happened on the Scott and the Shasta Rivers is last year, as the drought bore down upon us, the governor issued an emergency drought declaration. And this emergency declaration gave state agencies some new authorities to protect fish and rivers. And so we pushed the California State Water Board to develop an in-stream flow requirement for the Shasta River and the Scott River. This is a minimum flow requirement. It's like essentially the least amount of water that can be left in river and fish survive these drought years. And if you're not making that flow, then they can actually curtail the use of water by irrigators in the area. So that's what's been happening on the Shasta. And so we've had more water in the Shasta this summer than we have a lot of summers previous, and certainly would have had these rules not been in place. But a couple of weeks ago, a group of irrigators called the Shasta River Water Association decided that rules all of a sudden didn't apply to them. And they turned on their pumps, and in about a two-hour time period, the Shasta River dropped about 40%. So these rapid drops in flow are really dangerous for fish. Fish actually get stranded on the banks of the river when these flows drop like that. And this time of year, there's juvenile salmon and juvenile steelhead in the system suffocating on the banks of the river when this happens. So Friends of the Shasta did a great job. The tribes did a good job of getting the word out that this was happening. We demanded action from the agencies, and the agencies now appear to be taking some enforcement actions against this group of irrigators, and they have shut off their diversion. And now we have these our 50 CFS flow that is mandated by these new rules are now in effect, and that much water is in the river, which is really important because adult salmon are headed to the Shasta right now to try and spawn.
Dave, were you able to see the effect of the sudden drop in river water as Friends of the Shasta River?
I wasn't able to get out at that time. I was tied up. And realistically, it's the same kind of thing I've seen every year for the last 30 years is people take all the water out of the river. And it's just so painful. I don't need to see it again to know that it's not good and it's not a happy event and it shouldn't be happening. And so it's gotten increasingly difficult to go out there to be a witness to death.
Nick, of course, you live out in Siskiyou County, which is far different politically from here on the coast. And you are represented in Congress by Doug LaMalfa. I understand that he has weighed into this controversy. Can you tell us about what LaMalfa has said?
LaMalfa seemed to extend the sentiment that the ranchers could do whatever they wanted. I think there was no question in many people's mind that he was quite all right with the Irrigation Association doing what they did.
I think he even advised people to break the law, which I suppose is not a surprise coming from Doug LaMalfa, who also is sympathetic to the January 6th rioters that tried to overturn our democracy. So breaking the law is maybe not a big deal to Doug LaMalfa. Other folks in Siskiyou County are also pulling water and are getting served with violations. What else have you discovered, Nick?
It's true. We were recently made aware by the enforcement arm of the water board of the list of people who they have sent notices of violations to. And the list is pretty extensive. We're still going through that list, but we expect that there will be some names we recognize.
All right. Well, I'm sure there'll be calls for public accountability soon for these violators. Craig, you represent the Kurok tribe. What is the Kurok tribe's position in all of this?
Well, we think people should be held accountable who break the law. It cannot be a situation where it's every man for himself out there. We have to have rules. The people downstream do matter. And so we just can't let this disintegrate into whoever digs the deepest well gets the water, or whoever has the most riverfront property gets the water. We have to have rules. We have to share. The sharing has to be fair and just and equitable. And it has to consider the needs of fish and the communities downriver who depend on fish. So I think it's just detestable that a member of Congress would urge people to violate the law, not work through the due process to come up with a water sharing mechanism. But it really shows a blatant disregard for everybody that lives downstream.
It's pretty rude. LaMalfa represents a great deal of the Kurok tribe's ancestral territory. For him to pick sides in this dispute and to obviously come to the defense of the agricultural community over the interests of the tribal sovereign nation whose land he also represents. So for shame, I will editorialize. Yeah. Finger wagging at Doug LaMalfa. If listeners to the show haven't picked up already, Doug LaMalfa is one of my favorite people to dunk on because I just think that he's just such a boorish. All right. Well,
tell us what you really think.
I'll never be able to run for office because I've said so many things on here that would be disqualifying for anybody and should be disqualifying for folks. The Eco News Report. We're talking about the Klamath River and its sorry state. All right. So My mom, when talking about bad news, always tries to do this like Oreo cookie approach where like she'll begin with bad news and then do some good news and then go back to bad news. And it, in her mind, it softens all of these blows. So, Craig, let's talk about some good news.
Well, as most of your listeners probably know by now, we have been working our tails off for over 20 years to pull off what was at one time unimaginable, the single biggest river restoration project the world has ever seen. And this is the removal of the lower four Klamath River dams, relatively large dams. This has never been done before. We've worked through the system. We protested. We sued. We did all the right things. We negotiated an agreement with the dam owner. But it's been a long time to kind of go through all the regulatory hurdles you have to go through to get to and figure out how to pay for it. But last week, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission issued the final environmental impact statement for Klamath Dam removal. And it really is a watershed moment, no pun intended, for us working on Klamath Dam removal. And it really tees up the final step, and that is the FERC commissioners themselves will have a meeting. There's five FERC commissioners. They could have a meeting on this as soon as October to consider issuing the license surrender order. And that is effectively an approval for the Klamath River Renewal Corporation to go forward and actually remove these dams. And it puts us on track to actually begin the process of dam removal early next year. And so it'll take over a year to remove the dams. We have, in some cases, we have to repair roads, repair bridges. We've agreed to improve the city of Waurika's water line, draw down the reservoirs, and actually physically remove the bricks and stones that make up these dams starting in January of 24. So we're all really excited. We've got our fingers crossed. We're not doing a touchdown dance yet, but we feel like we're really close to the end zone.
That's fantastic. So we've brought up that there's just not enough water these days. And so you talked about drying down reservoirs. I imagine that there is going to be some skepticism from the community, people who might not understand how this dam system works. Why are we removing dams when we want to have stored water, when we need all of this water for other uses? So why is this a good idea?
Well, I'll just point out that Klamath River dams provide no irrigation water and provide no drinking water. These are hydropower dams that really aren't very good at making hydropower. So in essence, we call these deadbeat dams. They really don't pay for themselves, which is why the company is willing to give them up. Different dams play or serve different purposes in different places. So not all dams are created equal. These dams block salmon migration to almost 400 miles of historic salmon habitat. Half the Klamath Basin is simply off limits to salmon because of these dams. And we talked about that spring complex in the Shasta Valley. Well, that's sort of the beginning of the spring complexes. And as you continue up into the Klamath Basin, to that volcanic basin, there's a lot of places where you find these spring complexes. So removing these dams give fish more access to these cold water springs in this volcanic landscape. So that's really important. These dams increase water temperatures in the summer. So think about these still reservoirs underneath the heat. It's 100 degrees outside. The water gets warm. So it has these water quality problems. And then downstream of these dams, where the flow in the river is real static and stable, this is where these fish disease-causing parasites flourish. And there's a worm called a polychaete. It's the intermediate host for one of these major fish disease-causing parasites. It does really well in that stable habitat below the dams. So taking out the dams is going to give fish a lot more room to roam, places to spawn. It's going to cool water temperatures in the summer, and it's going to dramatically improve water quality for fish.
Well, I think you've teed up what the bad news is. And this is the other part of the Oreo cookie, right? So we've had the good news, and now here comes the bad news. I understand that there is another ongoing fish kill event in the Klamath River. And this follows on the bad news from a couple weeks ago, where we had a large fish kill event in mid-Klamath caused by a debris flow following thunderstorms in an area that had burned in recent years. So what's going on with this fish kill? How bad is it now? How bad do we anticipate it is going to be?
So As you mentioned, the McKinney Fire kind of set up this situation where an intense fire was later, there was an intense rainstorm on that fire footprint and created a debris flow into the river.
And debris flow is just a bunch of dirt and sticks.
This is mostly mud and ash. I mean, this is a place where the fire burned so intense, everything basically burned to powder along these creeks. And then the rains basically washed dirt, debris, ash into the river. It was significant. It doubled the flow of the Klamath River in this reach above Happy Camp. But all that mud led to a depressing the levels of dissolved oxygen in the river. And actually, according to our water quality monitoring station, the DO in the Klamath River went to zero for several hours.
DO, dissolved oxygen.
Right. So this is like throwing a fish on the bank. They can't breathe. So we think somewhere between 50 and 100,000 suckers died. A lot of folks were like, so what, suckers? Well, those are the custodians of the river. They deal with algae and the detritus in the bottom of the river. They play a fundamentally important role in the ecosystem, but it also killed juvenile salmon and lamprey and crayfish and everything else in the river. So this was before the fall migration really got underway. So that event happened. It was pretty traumatic. The river's really been running pretty muddy and heavy with silt since that event. And we just were like, we did not know if it would have an effect on adult migration. Well, the adults are coming in now. We're starting to see adults dying of a disease called columnaris. When adult fish are crowded in warm water, it's a disease that tends to spread rapidly. So we're starting to observe that. That has triggered some relief by increasing flows on the Trinity River. And in contrast to the Klamath River dams, which are relatively shallow reservoirs that are warm, on the Trinity side, those reservoirs are really deep and have a big cold water pool. So releasing cold water flows from the Trinity, the idea is to cool off the lower Klamath. But what we've started seeing in the last couple of days is the salmon that have gotten above the Trinity-Klamath confluence, areas around Bluff Creek, we're starting to see a lot of mortality. And we see fish trying to crowd into tributaries. They're looking for cold water. And so this is really, and they seem to be wanting out of the main stem. So we suspect that the sediment load in the main stem is a problem. The temperature of the water in the main stem is a problem. And we're looking at the forecast, and it's predicted to be one of the hottest Septembers on record in California here in the next few days. So we're really nervous and uncomfortable, and we're starting to see what could be the beginnings of a big fish kill. But we're just monitoring in real time and really horrified by what we're witnessing. But it underscores how important dam removal is and the urgency to remove these dams as soon as possible.
All right, let's get back to dam removal. You said FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, can take action starting as soon as October, so just over a month away. I imagine people are going to want to help the Creek Tribe, the Yurok Tribe, in getting these dams out. What is the best way for people to participate, to weigh in, to encourage FERC to do the right thing?
You can go to bringthesalmonhome.org. There's an action alert there. We have a lot of great partner organizations, so American Rivers, Trout Unlimited, California Trout, Friends of the Shasta. These are all groups that are good allies to the tribe. A lot of these groups, they're membership-based organizations. I encourage you to join these groups. I encourage you to answer these action alerts and get letters off to federal agencies to encourage them to do the right thing. All of that helps immensely.
And is there anything that we can do now? Besides, it sounds like there's been extra water being released from the Trinity River. Is there anything else that can be done to address water quality conditions in the Klamath River?
Well, I think people just need to be engaged politically in this conversation. As the weather, obviously the weather's changing, the climate's changing. We really are going to have to make major shifts in how our economy works, how our food systems work. And people really don't like change. But this idea that we can grow as much hay in the future as we did in the past, or we can graze as many cattle in the future as we did in the past, it's just not a realistic expectation. So we need folks to help usher in this new approach to how our economies work and how we grow our food.
Let's get back to the Shasta River. What's going on in the Shasta River that people can help with? How can they help ensure that base flows are being met and that the state stands up to bullying big ranch money?
Well, what we haven't touched on yet is that what really supports this process is the California Department of Fish and Wildlife developing and endorsing in-stream flow numbers that will be protective of salmon. And that's the only way we got the curtailment we have was the Department of Fish and Wildlife did advance numbers for both the Shasta and the Scott, which the Water Board could then act on. But we've got to recognize that they get a lot of pressure to just back off and look the other way. So the Department of Fish and Wildlife could really use letters of support saying it should really endorse their efforts for in-stream flows. The State Water Resources Control Board has regular meetings, and they really benefit from hearing from people that thank them for protecting in-stream flows and fish and wildlife, where in the past, their history was that they really couldn't say no to a diverter. Anybody wanted water, they just said yes. It's why we're in the mess we're in. And so to change directions on that, they really need to know they've got public support. And they're readily findable online. They're a state agency. And I would suggest both the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Water Resources Control Board really need to be endorsed, supported, letters in favor written to them, thanking them for the efforts they've put in so far, and to keep it up.
All right. And so, Dave, I know that you've been working on the Shasta River for very many years, but Friends of the Shasta is a relatively new group. How can people learn more about your work at Friends of the Shasta?
We have a website, shastariver.org, and we've got a Shasta River Facebook page. To be perfectly honest, keeping up and maintaining a web page is a real job. And so it doesn't change much very often, but Facebook is a lot more user-friendly. And then we also, our president also uses Twitter a lot. So just look for, do a search on Shasta River, and we're likely to be the first thing that comes up. And we try to keep up, but we're a small group, and oftentimes we're in the trenches fighting, and we just aren't able to keep up with writing and describing and trying to twist people's arms for money. It's just, we are activists.
All right. Well, go give them some love. And Nick, you are in hostile territory as an environmentalist in Siskiyou County. How can people support the Mount Shasta Bioregional Ecology Center?
The Ecology Center is the oldest nonprofit in Siskiyou County. Some of the battles we've waged have protected large swaths of Mount Shasta as well as Newberry Volcano. We've been great allies with the tribes. Our website, MountShastaEcology.org, has all the information you'll need and places you can find to donate to various causes and issues that we are currently working on.
All right. And now, Craig, I think that you probably know the question coming. Where can people find out more information about Klamath Dam removal and other issues involving the Klamath?
Well, I encourage folks to follow us at Klamath News on Facebook. I post regularly on Twitter at S. Craig Tucker. And for folks really curious about dam removal, the Klamath River Renewal Corporation has a great website, klamathrenewal.org. All the documents related to dam removal, frequently asked questions section, and the latest updates on what to expect in the future.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us on the Eco News, and thank you for your work on behalf of the Shasta and Klamath Rivers. This has been another episode of the Eco News Report. Join us again next week on this time and channel for more environmental news from the North Coast of California.